Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Michael Colgan as my special expert anniversary guest. Dr. Colgan is one of the world's most popular scientific experts in nutrition. Of course, he's a best-selling author, travels the world lecturing on topics related to anti-aging, sports nutrition, human performance, and hormonal health. Dr. Colgan has a distinguished reputation for expertise in sports nutrition science and functional fitness, and he's an advisor to literally hundreds, even thousands of elite athletes all over the world. People from all over the world come to see Michael at his Power Program Camp, his anti-aging camp. He has published many, many books, some fabulous books that everyone out there needs to read. These books should be part of our library, and they are found in libraries and in bookstores literally across the world. Good morning, Michael. It's wonderful to have you back on SNU for this, our fourth anniversary edition of SNU.
Hello, Corey. It's great to be here.
You know, I was lecturing recently to a group of people, Michael, and your name always comes up because I bring your work out. And one of the people said, you know, like, how did Michael get into it? And maybe you could just go back in time a little bit when you were teaching at the University of Auckland and tell the people out there how your life changed by getting connected into the physicality of sports nutrition.
Well, I guess I was a typical lecturer in a medical school. I was overweight, I smoked, I drank too much, and I thought that was normal. And I had responsibility for a clinic in the hospital where we put people that had what you call psychosomatic disease, which means really that we didn't know what the hell was wrong with them, but obviously something was. We used to use them with the students for testing for the interns. We'd give them case notes and we'd say, now, find out what's wrong with that one. Because they didn't know that we didn't know either.
Oh, boy.
But one day, a very smart young doctor called Grant Gillette said to me, Doc, you know, the thing that's wrong with these people is they're undernourished. And I thought, wow, that's a really good idea. So we started to analyze the food in the hospital. And we analyzed some 160-odd foods. And every single patient in that hospital was getting food every day that was deficient in multiple nutrients, according to the RDA standards. And that was an amazing shock to me, because all through my education, I've been taught that you get enough nutrients from your food and there's no need to take any pills or vitamins and things. And that was just an amazing shock. And we published that material, and people, frankly, didn't believe it. And then several years later, this is in the 70s, the American Medical Association brought out a book showing the same thing in American hospitals. And that was amazing. It means that people who are ill, who go to hospital, then are made sicker by the food. And so we started to feed patients with vitamins and minerals, and they seemed to get better. But the trouble is you can't really tell from patients, because people go to hospital when they're at the low ebb of an illness, and the majority of people who go to hospital would improve to the point of discharge from the hospital without any treatment whatsoever. And that's the problem. I had to find people who were healthy to begin with and see whether vitamins and minerals had any effect on them. So we chose the university track team, and we clocked the curve of improvement in performance over a couple of years. And it was amazing. We published this material too. It's been published and republished in various books. There was a definite, significant increase in performance, in the slope of the performance curve from year to year, with the athletes that were on a multiple vitamin mineral formula. And that was amazing to me. And after about 3 years, I started to take vitamins myself. 30 years later, and we know a lot more about it, and it was a good hunch at the time. But we didn't know much about it then, but now we realize that unless you provide the body with all of the materials that it needs to make new cells and to make them better than the old cells, you will never improve.
Now, how did you develop an interest in the actual training? The nutrition seems obvious, as your logical mind would follow the train of thinking, but what about the connection to training? Because you know that there are many, many people out there in the science world who have degrees, who understand the nutrition, but they don't train.
Right. And it's extraordinary to me. And I was one of them. And it was extraordinary that I'd reached my 30s and I had not ever done any training and didn't think it was necessary. The number of people that drop dead because they actually are unfit is huge. But even that being known still didn't make people want to train. What actually motivated me to get into the training aspect was that when I looked at the gyms and what actual exercise was being done, it was horrible. And it still is. In most places in the world, the training that people get is ridiculous. And so I started looking at what was more scientific. Having a background in physiology as well as biochemistry, I started looking at the physiology of the human body and what it takes to maintain it. And that was a great shock. You know, when we start as a baby, the body's curled in a fetal position. And that's primarily because all the chains of muscle from the frontalis muscle of the brow right over the back down the erector spinae down through the sacrotuberous ligament to the hamstrings and the Achilles tendon along the plantar fascia to the big toe, that set of muscles has got to develop sufficiently to straighten the body out and hold it upright against gravity. My God, we do very little to do it. In fact, today, we bred a couple of generations of clumsy and poorly postured kids because we get them on their feet too soon. Because at least the last couple of generations, we haven't realized the necessity of crawling in a baby in order to develop these muscles that hold its head up and hold it up straight. Now, the worst thing about this, Corey, is that if you don't exercise to maintain those muscles, then wear and tear, and of course a lot of incorrect exercise when people do it, such as a lot of bodybuilding exercises, they conspire to pull the front of the body down. They pull the shoulders down, they shorten the abdominal muscles, they shorten the hip flexors, and our lifestyle, where we sit a lot, does the same thing. So that by the age of 60, the muscles of the whole back chain of the body are collapsing. There's no need for them to do that. So just from a point of view of enabling the body to stand upright, if you don't exercise the back chains of muscles properly, then your body's just not going to last. And we have, right now, in the United States and Canada, roughly 3 out of 5 people over the age of 50 have back problems. 3 out of 5. And most of that is avoidable. Most of it is not to do with bone disease. It's to do with collapse. And we collapse. Gravity eventually pulls us back to the fetal position in which we began. And if you don't fight it, you're not going to be very happy from the age of about 50 onwards.
That's amazing. That's a wonderful, wonderful analogy and a very helpful way to help understand in its simplicity. That's something that a child could relate to, Michael.
Yes, it's so good. When you start examining the physiology of it, we were programmed to do exercise in a particular way. And unfortunately, the way that exercise has developed over the last century is almost antagonistic to that.
Now, you've got your own line of power program equipment.
Yes.
I've used it. You teach people how to use it. You've got power program trainers all over the world now. Tell us about some of the pieces of equipment that you have designed and what makes them unique.
Well, one of the things that you have to do to exercise the body properly is to develop the muscles without compressing the spine. That's unfortunately was not understood when weight lifting developed from the old carnival sideshows of the 1900s through to today. And the criterion for much of weightlifting and powerlifting is how much weight you can lift off the ground. Well, if you lift your own body weight, and you can test this yourself, if you lift your own body weight off the ground and stand up as tall as you can, you'll be, if you're, say, 5'9", 5'10", you'll be approximately half an inch shorter than without holding that weight. That half an inch is compression of the spine. It's amazing that that happens, but it does. And of course, gravity pulls us down every day. If you measure your height in the morning when you get up, and then you measure it again in the evening before bed, you'll see there's roughly half to three-quarters of an inch difference. You'll be three-quarters of an inch shorter at night. And your body then recovers, the spine recovers and gets rehydrated during the night when you lie on your back or when you lie down, so that gravity's influence is taken away. Now, if you exercise continually so that you add to that compression of the spine, then believe me, you are asking for trouble later in life. If you want to have a healthy spine and be able to stand upright and move properly when you're over 50 years of age, you better do exercise now, which lengthens the spine while it contracts the muscles.
So are you saying not to deadlift, or to deadlift and also to bring in these other spine lengthening motions?
Right. Yeah, obviously you need to be, if you want to be strong, you've got to do exercises that are systemic. The deadlift is one of them. I mean, it affects the whole body. It causes a systemic spurt in growth of every muscle because of the strain that it puts on the system. But you should aim in your exercise to use resistance movements which either are neutral, in other words, they don't lengthen the spine. Say, for instance, you use a cable press combined with a cable row. That's a neutral exercise. If it's parallel, and doesn't either compress or lengthen the spine. But if you use an overhead exercise, such as a pull-up, that lengthens the spine while it's contracting the muscles. And we've developed the Super Quad machine, which is a four-stack crossover cable machine with many, many exercises which lengthen the spine while contracting the muscles.
Now, you're also bringing in a functionality of muscle in motion, aren't you? That's kind of unique and unlike, say, some of the sterile-like exercises that we see people in gyms doing.
Oh, it is extraordinary that muscle training has developed without any idea of muscle function. You know, you train the biceps, and you train the triceps, and you train the pectorals, without any idea that these muscles form muscle chains depending on the position of the limb. And most of weight training has been at variance with that, because it's been essentially ignorant of the physiology of the body. And our whole system is based on training for muscle function, never for muscle mass. And of course, you then have to say, well, what are the components of superb muscle function? What we've done is measure these components in a large number of Olympic athletes, hundreds of them over the last 30 years. And they're one of the first things, of course, is posture and balance. If you haven't got the right posture and balance, you can't move. And unfortunately, a lot of people develop big muscles, but they've got no movement, no function in them, because their balance is terrible. One of our basic exercises, for example, is to be able to step up on a Swiss ball and stand there and exercise with weights while balancing on it. Now, that doesn't happen in year one, but all of my trainers can do that. All of my trainers can do heavy exercise standing on a Swiss ball.
What's the connection between losing balance and age?
Well, that's a very interesting one. One of the things that goes most quickly, and it's part of our brain function, and we might get to that in terms of what you need to take, is the balance component controlled primarily by the substantia nigra and the dopamine-producing cells of the body. as people age, they lose their balance unconsciously. And this is simple for you to test at home. Simply stand on one leg, extend your arms, palms upward in front of you, and then close your eyes when you've got your balance. If you cannot stand there easily for 30 seconds, it's an indication that your dopamine system's going down the tubes. Most of the people we test over the age of 35, their dopamine system is going down the tubes. Now, what happens as you get a bit older than that, in train with your dopamine system going down, your reaction speed goes down, and that's due to another reason, but I won't go into it all now. And these two things combined are the reason, the major reason that older people break their hips, because the balance front to back is more stable than the balance side to side. And when people get older and they've lost the balance structure in the brain, then when they fall, they don't even know that they're falling. And by the time they've realized it, they've hit the ground, usually with their hip, because their reaction speed is gone also, and they haven't time to put out their hand to stop themselves. And it's a very sad thing that it's a simple mechanics problem that is actually easily solvable.
Now, you've got several formulations that you've designed and formulated yourself that you offer through the Institute.
Yes.
What should a person look for in a good foundation, a good multivitamin and mineral program?
It would take all of this interview to talk about that, Corey, but the best thing is for people to go online and look at the formulas. We publish all of our formulas in detail at ColganInstitute.com. If you look at them, you'll see what is required for an average person, when a person gets over the age of 50, when a person is active, when a person is an athlete. We have different formulas for each. But there are some basic things. One is very important and not yet understood by, you don't see it in the media yet, you will though. Between about the ages of 20 and 60, the capacity of the mitochondria, that is the energy producing structures in your cell, declines by about half. Now if the mitochondria cannot process the energy in the food that you eat so as to release it, then your body has no alternative. First, it has to store it as fat. Second, all of the energy requiring functions of the brain and body are reduced by about half by the time the average person is 60. And so the most important thing in terms of after you've got a basic vitamin and mineral formula is to protect the brain by protecting the mitochondria. Now the major way that mitochondria are damaged is by oxidation. It's strange that we read in a lot of the health food literature about oxidation and free radicals and antioxidants, vitamin C, vitamin E, and various things that are supposed to be better. There's flavor of the month antioxidants. Almost all of those cannot get to the mitochondria. The mitochondria are protected inside the cell. Now, the most important thing about this, and what is not generally understood yet in the health literature, is that approximately 90% of all free radicals produced in the body are produced at the mitochondria of the cells. So if you cannot protect the mitochondria of the cells, protection of the peripheral mechanisms is pretty unimportant, because it's the mitochondria that provide the energy. And if the energy declines, then everything declines. We know now that the only antioxidants that can enter the cell and get to the mitochondria are mitochondrial metabolites. One of these is R+ lipoic acid. And a second one is acetyl L-carnitine. A third is L-carnosine. And a fourth is a derivative of coenzyme Q10 called idibenone. And a fifth is N-acetylcysteine as a precursor of the endogenous mitochondrial antioxidant glutathione. So those things are very important to have in a formula. R plus lipoic acid, acetyl-L-carnitine, L-carnosine, idibenone, and N-acetylcysteine.
And the formulation called Basic Body Armor, that sounds like a great name. Is that something that the average athlete might benefit from also?
That's something that anyone can benefit from. It's the basic means of protecting the peripheral mechanisms. It's not designed to cover the protection of the brain.
So we're climbing up this ladder. It's an evolution, and we're making progress, and we start with the basics, and then we just start to add on as we become more aware of the right things to take.
I think so, yes.
So we've got to start with a really, really good foundation.
Yes, because if you don't protect the peripheral mechanisms, then the cells don't grow properly. And if the cells don't grow properly, then nothing works. Like, for instance, you have to have sufficient vitamin E in its various forms, alpha, beta, delta, and gamma tocopherol, plus tocotrienols, in order to build the cell membranes properly. Without that, you don't have any proper cells. You have leaky cells, and they don't work properly.
Now, I'm just thumbing through one of your masterpieces, the New Power Program, and of course, all your trainers have gone through this, and you work from this as a text, and it's also in my Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Program.
Yes.
Now, something comes to mind here. You're talking about the abdominals, and we often refer to the midsection as the six-pack, but you're saying, hold it now, there's no six-pack, this is an eight-pack. So what do you mean by that? And give us an idea of what it really takes to work the abs correctly.
Right, well, there are two things that people want. They want to show the bumps in terms of aesthetics. They want to show the bumps on the abdominis rectus. The abdominis rectus actually has eight heads, not six. It's commonly called a six-pack because six actually show above your waistline, as it were. And the other two are down around the groin. And so it's actually an eight-pack. But it's very important to understand that eight-pack because those two that are down around your groin attach to the pelvis. And when you understand that, you see that the action of the abdominis rectus is from sternum to pelvis. So the action is up and down. So any attempt to develop those bumps that is successful just in developing the abdominis rectus is going to make your gut stick out. And you can test this yourself. Any sort of sit-up that you want to try and do, put your hand on your gut and do the sit-up or whatever it is, and you'll find the gut sticks out further. What you're training the gut to do when you're training the bumps is to make it stick out. Now, most people don't want that. They want to train the bumps with the opposite effect, so that there is an inward curve to the abdominals, which is a very good thing because that's what holds the gut in place. And if you don't hold the gut in place, you can't transfer power from the legs to the upper body and back again. So in order to do that, though, you have to train the sheet of muscle that is behind the abdominis rectus called the transversus. And the transversus goes around the body from the front behind the abdominis rectus and attaches to the back. It attaches to the fascia of the muscles of the back. It is the corset. Now, in order to have the desired stomach, both aesthetically and in terms of power, you have to make that corset as strong as possible. And that's the problem with most abdominal programs. They don't do that.
So training correctly, that is the position that you're going to hold on to. Not just simply training for training's sake, but training right and doing it right.
Yeah, if you, and you can test this yourself, if you stand up naked in front of the mirror and let your gut go, if it falls out in an outward curve, you have been training it wrongly. It should fall in an inward curve.
So how do we get at that transversus? How do we develop that corset that you're talking about?
Well, one of the things you have to do is the problem with most of the abdominal exercises is they affect either the abdominis rectus, which you exercises which just shorten the distance between the sternum and the pelvis, or they affect the hip flexors. Now, for instance, leg raises are mainly a hip flexor exercise that affect primarily the psoas and iliacus muscles and do not help the transversus very much. However, there are a number of exercises. When you raise your legs to more than 90 degrees, then the hip flexors start to get weak. Their pull is in the wrong direction. And the transversus is the only thing that's going to hold it up there. And the very easy way to test this is to hang on a bar with your legs straight and raise your straight legs till they touch the bar. Now you'll find that raising them to the halfway point by using the hip flexors, the psoas, etc., is fairly easy, especially if you've been doing sit-ups and leg raises and things. The sticking point comes when the hip flexors no longer have a great pull, and that is around about the 90-degree point. From 90 degrees upwards to about nearly 180, your transversus has to pull the gut in order to raise the legs straight. If you've trained your abdominals correctly, then you should have no difficulty in doing 20 repetitions of straight leg raises.
Okay, and what about the side chops, the wood chops that
well,
you mentioned?
Well, yes, obviously, because you're trying to train the corset, you want to make it as strong as possible. You have to train for spinal rotation. In my forthcoming exercise book, we split the exercises up. We start with spinal flexion, spinal extension, and spinal rotation as the three most important forms of exercise for an athlete. And wood chops is a great exercise in spinal rotation, which affects not only the internal and external obliques, but also it tightens the transversus.
That's wonderful. That's excellent insight, Michael. Now, people know about the Salt Spring Island anti-aging intensive that you have routinely and on an annual basis, the Power Program Camp,
right.
the training certification. Now, I know that you're up to something pretty big over there. I'm hoping that you might be able to share your vision, because you're making some big changes and you're really thinking big. So what's going on over there right now on Salt Spring Island?
Well, we had a 5-acre property here with a bit of a trail and a gym and things, but we have such a response. For instance, we've got a fair number of athletes who want to come and stay here for months at a time, that we've now bought an 80-acre property on the lake. We're in the process of building a number of buildings, which will include a gym, a conference center, and various things, and also an equestrian center there, because we've always had horses. We just want to combine everything together.
So basically, you're just expanding the program.
Well, yes, and we also have much more of the actual athletic movements incorporated into the Power Program. We have five phases a year, the extension, connection, strength, stabilization, power, link, and coordination. And the two most important for the transfer of what you've done in the gym to your athletic endeavors are the link and coordination exercises. Up to last year, we didn't have the facilities to do a lot of them. Now we're going to have a very considerable number available.
And again, all the information that anyone needs is on your website. You mentioned that, ColganInstitute.com.
Right.
And what about a phone number that people can call?
Oh, yes, you can phone 250-653-2073. It's the Colgan Institute here.
And for people interested in getting involved with the Power Program, when is that coming?
The Power Program camp this year is on the 4th to 7th of August.
And it's usually in August of every year, isn't it?
We vary it a bit. Yeah, it's August or September.
Okay, so usually around that time. Everyone out there, if you haven't been, consider that a component of your health span experience.
And we're very pleased, Corey, that you come out and lecture there too. That's great.
Well, it's wonderful, and just knowing that we can work together and get the word out and share the good news and see people bring this information into their lives within their own life and in their own family and in their own community, then start sharing the value of which they themselves have experienced. And isn't that what you and I are doing on a personal level?
Well, we hope so. It certainly seems that way. We've got the spread all through the world now, and I know you have too. And it's a great joy. You know, one of the things that you have asked me before is, what is the source of our motivation? It's the immense amount there is to learn. Well, I've been studying this for 30-odd years, and I'm still a babes in the woods compared to the potential of the human organism. It's absolutely fascinating. And that's one of the things that you and I can do, Corey, is make people curious about this brief encounter that we call life and this body, this miraculous vehicle, which has so much neglected potential in it.
Dr. Michael Colgan, research scientist, author, lecturer, expert in sports nutrition, thank you very much.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.